The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Talk about some of the more interesting aspects of business of sports. There's all kinds of cool questions, so this is a fun topic for me.
The country is finally getting the memo about how amazing this sport is. I think the sky's the limit for MLS.
We're spending more and more of our time in a digital world, and it's also becoming a really powerful place for commerce.
It is so nice to be back and to be able to have fans back in the building. So despite the chaotic schedule, this is why we do what we do.
When you get into the playoffs, there's nothing better as a player than excitement. And it's also for the organization and sponsors involved.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
Coming up today, we are talking with NBA Players Association Executive Director Tamika Tramaglio, who will discuss her new role and the future of the NBA. And stick around for our dive into the changing landscape of sports technology with Jenna Kurath, Vice President and Head of Comcast NBC Universal Sports Tech. We have a lot to talk about. That's straight ahead on Bloomberg Business of Sports. But first, let's look at some of the topics that are making news this week. We have so many. Let's start. First of all, we all knew this was going to happen.
This is like an I told you so, right?
Yeah. St. Peter's head coach is now going to Seton Hall, Shaheen Holloway. This we saw coming a mile away, Scar.
Yeah, and of course he was the head coach of the Cinderella team, St. Peter's, taking them all the way through to the Elite Eight. They, of course, lost to North Carolina at the end and didn't make it to the Final Four, but this was the Cinderella story of this NCAA March Madness season, and it was just kind of a matter of time before we knew he would get snapped up by, or he would leave for another team, a more prominent team.
And Lynchy, he's about to get paid.
He's going to get paid. He's got a six-year deal. And you know, the old commercial, he did it the old-fashioned way. He earned it. He was an assistant coach. I love that commercial. But he was an assistant coach at Iona and Seton Hall for 11 years, then became the head coach at St. Peter's for 4 years. So he's got 15 years of solid basketball coaching in his resume to now move into the Big East as the head coach at his alma mater. I feel bad for the team he leaves behind, but many schools become victims of their own success, and this is just good for him. I don't think anybody, he didn't do it during the middle of the season. He didn't announce before the tournament, okay, I'm leaving at the end of the tournament. He did it the right way, and hats off to him.
By the way, to put it in perspective, he is filling the shoes of Kevin Willard, who left for Maryland. Now, Willard made last season about $2.4 million, and that's about 10 times what Holloway got with St. Peter's. You can't blame the guy. I mean, good for him.
It's a Cinderella story for him, too. I mean, it's his dream come true to go back to his alma mater and coach the team there.
Yeah, very good. Speaking of golf, we, boy, if Tiger Woods came to the Masters, you talk about the ratings going through the roof, Lynchy. There's all that chatter that's going on. Tiger, he played a practice round at Augusta National.
Wait, hold on. Nothing's confirmed, right?
Nothing's, well, the only thing confirmed is that he played the practice round. Didn't say that he is going to play at Augusta National. But boy, folks, I'm tuning in if this happens.
Let me tell you something. This is crazy. The way this whole story started was someone tracked his plane leaving Florida and landing at Augusta, and then it stayed there for most of the day, and then he reportedly played with his son Charlie, walked the course, which you have to walk, you're not allowed to take a golf cart. And that's one of the big issues that Tiger's struggling with, is that to be able to walk a course. Now, Augusta is a little bit of a hilly course. He's told Jim Nance at the Genesis Invitational that he would like to walk on a flat course. But just the mere presence of Tiger Woods in a practice round has already put prop bets on the board with all kinds of betting platforms to miss the cut, to make the cut, top 20, top 10 after round one, tee off in Saturday's final group, shoot over 70 or lower in all four rounds. It's already out there. And unlike most tournaments, where there's a deadline where you have to commit to play. Being a former champion, he has up until Thursday morning, April 7th, which is when the tournament starts, to declare whether he wants to play or not.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's going to be an anticipation. Let's wait. The first, they do the ceremonial tee off at about 7:30 in the morning with Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and usually Tom Watson. And everyone will just be buzzing. Did Tiger show up today? Is Tiger practicing? Is it Tiger in the field?
And, you know, Rory McIlroy is also adding fuel to the fire, right? Because he said that Tiger Woods told him while he was at Augusta on Tuesday, I'm just seeing what's going to happen here. I'm going to see if I can make it around 18. So we're going to be talking about this for a while.
McIlroy said it would be phenomenal if Tiger Woods hopped in the Masters. Yeah, stirring the pot. By the way, I wonder if there's a prop bet out there if Tiger even gets in the Masters.
I'm sure there is.
I mean, just say, okay, I'm going to play. I'm going to see if I can look that up because I might.
If it's out there, Michael Barr will find it.
Darn toot. this next story, this one is a serious topic. The NFL investigation into sexual assault allegations against Cleveland Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson will take a while. That's according to Commissioner Roger Goodell, Scar.
Yeah, and this is something we knew would come up. Goodell says that Watson could still be disciplined under the league's personal conduct policy. There are 22 pending civil lawsuits accusing Watson of inappropriate sexual conduct. Lynchy, because of this, and because of the likelihood of some kind of disciplinary action, the Cleveland Browns structured a contract that would not penalize Watson if he does end up on the commissioner's exempt list.
The package he signed was 5 years, $230 million.
Fully guaranteed.
However, fully guaranteed, every single penny of it. However, the first year, his salary will be just a shade over $1 million. And if he is suspended for 1 year, he forfeits $1 million, but is guaranteed the remainder, $229 million.
Goodell, he spoke about this to the media at the NFL owners meeting in Florida this past week. Let's listen.
We've been very clear with every club that whether the criminal matter it gets resolved or not, the personal conduct policy is something that's very important to us. And so the personal conduct policy does not need a criminal violation to be a violation of the personal conduct policy. So they recognize that that's something that we're going to pursue. We're going to make sure that we get to the bottom of the facts and make sure that how it applies to the personal conduct policy. That's where we are at this point. And when we get to that, a decision will be made on whether there should be any discipline. And if so, what is it?
Now, as you mentioned, Scar, 22 women are suing him. Now, Watson denies the allegations, but we're back to that same old question, who are you going to believe, me or the 22 women?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing is, what's the point of a personal conduct policy if you can work around it like this so artfully with a contract that basically will cost Watson potentially $1 million, but not $229 million, the rest of his contract? It becomes a toothless policy.
Now, let's talk about something a little more. Did you have this on your bingo card? Bruce Arians unexpectedly retired as head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Arians is heading to the Bucs front office. Should say Arians is 69. He guided the team to its second Super Bowl title. He says it's not related to his health. And now the team's defensive coordinator, Todd Bowles, if you remember that name, is the head coach. He was the head coach for the New York Jets. So, Lynchy, I want to ask you, you think Tom Brady got the heads up before we knew anything was going to happen?
I'm told that the night that Tom Brady announced that he was returning, that Arians called him up and said, you know, I'm thinking about bailing out. And Tom said, that's fine. Don't worry about it. He says, but we're going to promote within, and we're going to keep the same system going. Todd Bowles is going to be the coach.
Wait,
and Brady says,
oh, okay. I was going to say, Tom Brady dictated what was going to happen, or?
Nope. Brady decided he was returning.
Uh-huh.
And then Arians told him, he said, well, I may not be here. And Tom said, that's fine. You've done everything, and we're going to continue with the continuity here with Todd Bowles, who should have been hired as a head coach by some other team. I mean, he leads the team to a Super Bowl with great defense 2 seasons ago, and they came within one crazy pass from the Rams of maybe going to another Super Bowl this year. So a lot of things, kind of, a lot of the dominoes were falling here. Brady comes back. Arians retires, Bowles gets the job, and now there's some whisperings again that maybe Tom Brady still might be interested in talking to Stephen Ross down in Miami about a possible ownership and maybe playing for the Miami Dolphins.
Wait. What? Tom Brady just gave his blessings for Todd Bowles replacing Bruce Arians at Tampa Bay. And didn't he make it clear in his I'm not retiring anymore speech or statement that he was going to be with Tampa Bay?
This is true, Scarlett. However, now that he's back in the league, the Dolphins are seeing a great opportunity here. Certainly, at least just talking to him, anything to spike up interest in your team in the offseason. And this has been a story that was floated about a week ago and then was shot down. But now with Arians going, Brady says, I'm cool with that. And they said, part ownership of the Miami Dolphins and quarterback of the Dolphins in the same division with Bill Belichick. Maybe something I might have to think about. May not happen, but it's out there.
Yeah, and the talk is certainly benefiting the Dolphins as well. By the way, yes, we should mention that Todd Bowles becomes the sixth minority head coach currently in the NFL, which is good news given that when that lawsuit was filed, there were only, I believe, two or three, no more than before the Rooney Rule was instituted.
And if we didn't have enough to talk about, Colin Kaepernick will serve as honorary captain for the Michigan football spring game. Now, what is also significant about that is that, I wonder who the coach now is of Michigan. I wonder if they were kind of together when Kaepernick was with the 49ers, Scar.
The answer would be yes. It would be one Jim Harbaugh, who was coach of the 49ers, and when Kaepernick was quarterback of the 49ers, and they went to the Super Bowl in 2012. So there you go.
And in that game, Jim Harbaugh coached the 49ers, and his brother John coached the Baltimore Ravens at the time. But Kaepernick really burst onto the scene. He was an exciting, electrifying player. And this is going to be interesting because over the weekend, Michigan held its spring game, and Colin Kaepernick, the honorary captain. More than anything, Jim Harbaugh is telling the National Football League, this guy is still relevant. He's here. He's playing. He's available. He should be in the National Football League. And I'm proud as heck to put him out here as an honorary captain on our field.
Up next on the show, we speak with Tamika Tremaglio, executive director of the NBA Players Association. That's straight ahead on Bloomberg Business of Sports. I'm Michael Barr. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
I'm on Twitter at Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch on Twitter at LynchyWCBB.
And don't forget to catch our podcast. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays on all your podcast platforms right here on Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
Today, we are speaking with the head of the NBA Players Union, Tamika Tremaglio, who took over as executive director in January at an important time for the business of professional basketball. Tamika, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Well, first I have to start because you're taking over for Michelle Roberts, who I've known for several years now, and one great chief to another great chief. Did Michelle give you any advice taking over?
Oh, absolutely. So really great question, and you were right. Michelle is certainly a legend, and it is obviously a privilege to be able to assume this role after her. I will say I actually worked with Michelle for about 15 years or so. So quite frankly, there have been many lessons that I have learned from Michelle over the years. She is really good at what she does and has really left the union in a great place. But I think the primary thing from her perspective is sort of focusing on the business, and I think that was part of the reason for hiring me, is so that I could really focus on sort of this next stage for the players and focusing on the business of basketball.
So what is the next stage? What do you see on your to-do list, the three biggest challenges you need to tackle?
So there are three challenges. So thank you, Scarlett, very much for teeing that up. I've really been focused on sort of what are our business opportunities, looking at the future of basketball, and then finally the development and protection of our players. So when we talk about the business of basketball, that involves CBA, that involves Global, that involves our licensing arm, Think 450. All of those things will make up what that looks like, and recognizing that the market, of course, is changing. And then as we look at the future of basketball, we see the role technology is playing. We see how we have to engage fans differently. We now know the platform that our players have from a social equity standpoint, so making sure that we're responding appropriately to that, and our corporate responsibility, certainly. As a union, our men are very, very generous. They are very focused on making sure that they're giving back to the community, so the things that we're doing there remain pivotal to what we do as an overall union, and certainly what our players are doing, all 450 of them. And then finally, as we look at the development protection of our players, we're looking at not only physical health, but mental health. We recognize that during this time period, there are many individuals who have suffered from a mental health perspective, and certainly our men are no different, and they will play better as a result of being able to sort of offload some of those things. And then making sure that they're developed for the next stage in their career so that we're giving them opportunities. We're exposing them to business experts. And so even at All-Star this year, we had the opportunity to do a Business Titan dinner. And we had Michael Rubin and Robert Kraft and Magic Johnson and David Solomon from Goldman Sachs, all of those individuals there to share some of their wisdom and to be mentors to our executive committee and to some of our players. So that's really where the focus is.
Ostensibly from the outside, the labor relationship between the Players Association and the NBA and owners and the commissioners seems to be the best, far and above all the other major sports. Why do you think that is?
No, I think it is because we are all working towards one collective goal, right? We see the players certainly as the biggest asset. And so clearly the league and the owners have recognized that. And there is a tendency and thought that all boats can rise in this instance, right? And so I think that's part of it. I also think sort of living through COVID has taught us all a lot. And we recognize that we can do so much more together and better if we're together, as opposed to sort of running at it apart. And so I am grateful to have inherited such a great relationship, but it's also a relationship that I think we are really focused on the players and how they're going to continue to grow, not only financially, but also from a development standpoint as well.
I want to talk about women putting a what for and why whipping on the sports business world, because I'm very happy to see it. And where do you see that going down the road, and all those, well, I can't say that word, all those stereotypes are just getting shattered. Where do you see it going?
Yeah, well, for certain, we all know that if you can see it, you can be it, right? And I think for certain, as we see more women in these roles, we recognize that it also makes it such that other women, other girls believe it to be possible. And so I think that that is phenomenal. I will also tell you, just like I am not the first in this situation, I am incredibly proud to be the second. And I hope there will be a third and a fourth. And so, you know, one of the things that I think will be so inspiring as we stop saying the first, right? And that we are seeing this more often because we recognize that other individuals can do this, and little girls can dream about doing things differently than perhaps I had the opportunity to dream about.
At some point, there will be a first woman head coach as well in the NBA. How do you think they would contend with that? Or is that something that they want? Has this come up at all in any of your discussions with the players?
You know, it has not come up directly in my discussions. However, you can see that they are very open to it, right? And you can certainly see... Well, because they have hired Michelle in this role, they hired me in this role, so I think they are seeing that obviously women can be in leadership roles, they're seeing that women can be great coaches. We have seen it already, you know, at the collegiate level, obviously women taking on head coach positions. Last night, I was actually at the game and they were honoring HBCUs and they showed Tuskegee and the first female coach of their football team. Like, those are things that you're seeing, and certainly our men are incredibly supportive of that. They're supportive of seeing women in leadership roles for certain, but they also are supportive even of our WNBA, their colleagues. They do a lot to make sure that they're engaged with them and that they're lifting them up. So I think this is just going to be one of those things that will happen as a result of that.
Does the WNBA need the NBA to be more proactive in order to thrive?
You are absolutely right. When we recognize that, Mike, that that is something that we really need to do and to be focused on. And our men are already doing it, right? They are attending the games. They're participating in joint marketing events. I know you've probably seen commercials as of late that have not only been with our men, but they've been with the women as well. And so that is a significant part of it. But even here in our office, we share our services. We think about things together. We go to market together. We look for opportunities that we can do things jointly. So there is no question that not only, you know, I wouldn't say that they absolutely have to have us, but I think with us being a part of them, that is significant and I think has made a huge difference in their success as well.
Tamika, thank you so much. That's Tamika Tremaglio, the NBA Players Union Executive. Our next guest is joining us from the Valero Texas Open in Austin. Jenna Kurath is the Vice President and Head of Comcast NBC Universal Sports Tech and focuses on finding and developing sports technology startups. Jenna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It is an absolute pleasure to be with you.
Now, as an old coot, technology back in the day that I remember was, you know, some guy named Phil screaming back in the control booth, "All right, I got a line out of Shea Stadium complete with color bars. Let's go." And then you bring in the World Series and there you are. Everything has changed so much. How has the landscape changed when it comes to sports technology?
Thank you. It is an absolute pleasure to be with you.
Now, as an old coot, technology back in the day that I remember was, you know, some guy named Phil screaming back in the control booth, "All right, I got a line out of Shea Stadium complete with color bars. Let's go." And then you bring in the World Series and there you are. Everything has changed so much. How has the landscape changed when it comes to sports technology?
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. That intersection of sports and technology has really taken off. You'll see it, whether it's the yard line in an NFL game, the video broadcast overlays, or even seeing the trajectory of a ball, you know, being able to watch that when you're watching the Valero Open, all of that technology. And when you can bring that technology and data into the storytelling, it just makes it a much richer, more nuanced understanding of the athlete, the amazing athleticism, and the sport itself.
So you head up startup partnerships and the Sports Tech Accelerator. That means you're looking for startups and new ideas that merge and align with Comcast NBC Universal's approach to sports programming. Can you give us an idea of what are some ideas and some businesses, startup businesses that have resonated?
Absolutely, Scarlett. It's a great question. So really our opportunity with Sports Tech is to find, fund, and then fast track the most innovative startups from around the world. We are investing them and we're working side by side with them to develop that next generation of technology that'll change the way that we experience sports. And we do that. We have 8 strategic investment areas. It's everything from media and entertainment to venue and event innovation, athlete player performance. And if you look at our first cohort, there were a number of really interesting success stories there. You had Eon Media that uses computer vision to look at live broadcasts or an OTT stream or video on demand. Okay. And it allows a sponsor to see every single time their logo appeared, the duration. Was it at the venue event level? Was it on the player itself? Did a commentator, as you mentioned earlier, mention that sponsor on air? Were they in a commercial break? It gives you a real-time picture of the ROI of that investment. And you see that so often in a social media campaign, but you've never had that in the live broadcast, not that level of accuracy before. So that's just one example. They worked with a number of the partners in our consortium and have earned commercial deals from that. I think one of the unique differentiations about our program is the fact that we have our sports partner consortium. And if you look at NBC, obviously you can appreciate we have NBC Sports and Sky Sports, Spectacor, where we own the Flyers, we own Wells Fargo Center. We've got the Golf Channel, amazing portfolio of sports where we could have just played with that set of assets and given really incredible access to the founders that are chosen for our program. But we decided to make it a little bit of a bigger vision and opportunity. So we brought in external sports partners. And they were all intentionally chosen because they build off of our media rights. They build off of our sponsorship investments. So we have NASCAR. Obviously, we broadcast the back half of the season with NASCAR. We have a 10-year title sponsorship on the Xfinity side of our business. Very data, tech-driven company. Comcast Business even powers about 13 of the tracks. We have WWE that joined us in the fall, along with PGA Tour. Again, we have got the Golf Channel and a deep and tight partnership with PGA Tour, where we're innovating side-by-side with them to enhance that storytelling. And WWE chose Peacock as their exclusive home for WWE events. And then we also have three Olympic partners as well. So we have USA Ski and Snowboard, USA Swimming, and USA Cycling. And so those are just important partnerships that all have interesting innovation needs and challenges and gaps to enhance and help athletes to bringing fans closer to the action on the field.
All right, Jenna, so you, as we speak, you're in Austin, Texas, at the Valero Texas Open. What are we going to see in terms of innovation and technology? Maybe not immediately this weekend, but what is the trend these days?
Well, I think I love that you asked about this time together. This is a really unique opportunity where we're bringing our founders together with our sports partners. We lucked out with what may not ever occur again, which is four of our sports partners holding three major sporting events, all within driving distance. So over the weekend, we were at NASCAR Circuit of America's race in Austin. We got a behind-the-scenes tech tour of the operations. We got to go inside the Petty truck to see all the tools, the cars, talk to the pit crew drivers, and really understand all the aspects of that sport. And I love that they reminded us that they're hiring more engineers than they are mechanics in that that sport. And then here we are today at the Valero Open. We'll get a behind-the-scenes tour of ShotLink technology, how they're really bringing that vision of every shot live to life. And then we'll be spending time with our NBC production team, really understanding how they bring the whole storytelling of a very unique sport when it comes to frankly doing the coverage, because you've got different players, different times over, 150 acres. It's a really unique production and storytelling of a tournament. And then we'll go from there to WrestleMania. So it's quite an opportunity to deepen those relationships that the sports partners have. They each are assigned a commercial advisor from the partner consortium. But this is also an opportunity to meet all the other partners. And what we're finding is it's really unlocking a number of new pilots and proof of concepts to really test and experiment with their technology so that we can learn from them, push the status quo, integrate that technology into our storytelling, and really advance their business, because they have an opportunity to prove their worth and earn commercial opportunities to build their business.
So I'm curious, because we often speak with a lot of VCs who are obviously investing in startup businesses as well, and the way that they figure out who they're going to invest in often is based on the founder. They'd like to talk about how they invest in the team, the people, the entrepreneur, him or herself. And the idea can always be tweaked or altered or adapted, or it can evolve. Do you approach things the same way, or are you looking at the idea first, given that you have specific ideas of how to apply it commercially?
100%, we are looking at the founders. There's really three main criteria. The first is it does need to have partner fit. So they need to be innovating in an area where there's an innovation need, a gap, or a priority for one or more of our sports partners. So we really do look for partner alignment, because at the end of the day, our partners are right there with us, helping us choose the 10 companies that come into the accelerator program, because they're going to work side by side with them and test and experiment and iterate. So partner alignment and fit is a huge piece of the program. The second is really the technology itself. Do we have line of sight of pilots and proof of concepts that we can do in the program, but far beyond that? That, again, is just going to elevate the game when it comes to storytelling from a broadcasting standpoint, all the way to nitty-gritty operations that can bring in cost savings or more efficiency, or allow us to personalize content and deliver it to fans with diverse tastes in a much more expedient way. But the last piece, and Scarlett, you were 100% right on this one, it really comes down to the founders. And so when we bring them in and we interview them, they get to do an overview of their company. We ask them all the tough questions, and we really do look for coachable founders in that program, because at the end of the day, you want somebody that has a strong conviction in their vision, but really wants a deep customer understanding and learning. And that's what they get in this 12-week program, to really test their assumptions, try to find really true product market fit so that they can build a revenue sustainable business.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Well, I love that you have partnerships with NASCAR, NHL, NASCAR, the WWE, NASCAR, the PGA Tour,
there's a theme here.
NASCAR, golf, NASCAR. Did I mention NASCAR? I'm sorry. I'll be quiet because I'm a NASCAR fan. So, Jenna NASCAR, let me ask you this question. As a fan of a lot of sports, how do you get the insight of the fan behavior and the trends related to innovation and technology?
You have to be there at the track to really see the fan engagement. NASCAR is very unique. People come, they will camp. It is a weekend affair. The access that you get to the drivers, to the cars, is really, truly unprecedented compared to any other sport out there. It was amazing on Sunday. You know, we were in the suite, but we spent more of the time walking around in the garage. We got to go into the Petty trailer and see, you know, the second car, all the tools, to be able to talk to the pit crew and understand what is it like to jump over the wall, to be the person that is getting as much gas into that car as possible.
Bar's
and then
eyes are lighting
afterwards.
Up, by the way. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Bar is so excited right now.
I get really excited about this as well, because he's sitting there getting as much gas into that vehicle as he can, while his partners, all five of them, have this amazing choreography to change out those tires and get back safely over the wall, and then weigh and see how much gas did we get in. Send that data up to the pit crew chief so that they can calculate how many more laps can they do. And then analyze the tires right there at the side of the track as well to understand what's the wear and tear based on the weather, the camber of the track. And so I get into the technology side of it, and that's probably one of the reasons I am a fan of NASCAR, because it is such a data-driven sport.
I knew I liked you for many reasons, Jenna.
Hey, Jenna, like many of us sports fans growing up, always bought the cheap ticket and then scouted out down below, and I'd find a box seat that hadn't been used by the first porter, and I'd sort of sneak down there. Now, I was researching one of your programs you have here, one of your founders, DIBZ, D-I-B-Z, where you can actually text message and upgrade your seat as the game is going on and do it for real?
In under a minute. It is exactly that use case that you talked about, where you go and you think, man, I wish I sprung for those tickets down there, and no one's sitting there. And so all within text message, you basically get an option of good, better, best. You can see the seats. You can choose the seats you want, pay for them all through text message, and move right to your new seat. And so if you think about that, whether that is the Braves, who piloted the technology and really discovered that there was untapped revenue opportunity for people who wanted to upgrade to a better seat. So there were, you know, ticket sales left on the table that they're now able to realize. But to your point, if you've got better seats, you're more engaged in the game. You're going to stay all the way through. You're going to enjoy another beer than you maybe would have otherwise. And it's just a better fan experience. So DIBZ is really an interesting one. It's such of a simple, frictionless experience for the fan. Behind the scenes, they're handling all the complexity of this text-based platform, but there's numerous use cases. It could be upgrading suites at perhaps the Valero Open. So you're getting a sense of some of the pilots and proof of concepts that we get to test out when we're at events like this, because we're here with our sports partners who are the decision makers to make those experiences happen.
I love that. So you don't have the usher tapping you on the shoulder saying, son, can you flip your ticket for the seat?
Happens to Lynch all the time.
Must be in the front row.
So, Jenna, looking ahead to the 2024 Summer Olympics, are any of these businesses, these startups, Do you envision them being part of the viewing experience for folks who are tuning in from home? What might that look like for someone who's watching the summer games?
So Headvantage is one of the companies that's in our current cohort right now. And they have developed this amazing technology that allows you to see through the eyes of the athlete. So imagine if you are want to see that winning touchdown pass through the eyes of Colin Kupp catching it, right? Or you want to see, what does Rory McIlroy see when he's lining up and looking at the putt? This is amazing technology that is embedded into the helmet of an NFL player or within the bill of a golf player that gets you into the mind of the athlete. And so I would love nothing more than to be able to get a sense for what those athletes are facing. And winter sports is a great example of it. Wouldn't it be amazing to know what Chloe Kim, what that experience is like when she's spinning in the half pipe?
Yeah, getting
so there's, yeah, exactly. There's just amazing ways for us to leverage that technology. And you've seen pieces of that with NASCAR where you see sort of the perspective of the driver. This is bringing that accessibility to so many more sports.
Jenna Kurath, Vice President and Head of Comcast NBC Universal Sports Tech, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure being with you. Thank you.
Great interviews for this week's show. Jenna Kurath, I just remember the time back in the day when you still had snow on the TV set and you're trying to make sure that the rabbit ears are all tuned in, and I'm trying to watch the 1976 Daytona 500, which is still one of the best ones ever in the history of NASCAR, and compare that to today and the technology that NBC has. It is amazing, Scarlett.
I'm still picturing the rabbit ears with the aluminum foil on top to get the better reception. I think it's so exciting the way that they can make the game come alive and give you a bird's eye perspective, the insider look at the way that the athlete is taking the field or seeing the course. It's like a video game come to life, which is kind of what I was thinking the entire time she was describing it. And of course, Lynchy, when it comes to actually attending the games, you get something else entirely, right? You can get an upgrade and you know, within seconds on your phone, as opposed to hoping that the usher turns away so that you can run down to the seat.
Well, this program is called DIBZ, D-I-B-Z, DIBZ. And you know, I love that. I just love this because we've all done this. We either get the cheapest ticket you can get, and then you sort of scouting around the first two innings, or if it's a basketball game, the first quarter. If nobody shows up in those seats, you go down with butterflies in your stomach, but you have to walk in like you belong there, and you sit down. And there's always the fear of every time an usher came down the aisle, oh, here it is, I'm getting booted out. Well, now, within a minute, you can get a text message to say, hey, I got three in the row number four by the Braves dugout. Come on down. And you can sit there the rest of the game, and the butterflies are gone, and you can sit there like, this is mine. And
like
I think that's
king.
A great, great program. Yeah, absolutely.
Why, Lynchy?
Upgrade during the game.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never done that before in my life at the old Tiger Stadium at Michigan and Trumbull. I don't know what you're talking about. Scar, I don't know what the man's talking about. I don't know.
You'll never find evidence of Barr sitting anywhere but in his seat.
That's right. You'll never find evidence. We also talked to Tamika Tremaglio because with Michelle Roberts, who was just fantastic in that job with the NBA union. And Tamika said it. Yeah, she's got big shoes to fill, but that's a person that can do it in a hurry, Scar.
Yeah, and she comes to the table ready. She comes to the negotiating table ready to do just that. I'm really intrigued, Lynchy, by the point on the WNBA and its relationship with the NBA, because so many other sports leagues, and I'm thinking of hockey here, have looked at that as kind of the model to emulate and to develop and to adopt for their sport as well.
Well, the NBA has made a conscious effort to help the WNBA thrive, and they do that through supporting, like, physical appearances, NBA players showing up at WNBA games. That says a lot in terms of credibility, marketability, so ticket sales. I said, hey, LeBron James is sitting in the game right here. You know,
yeah,
maybe I should go to one of these games. Maybe I'll tune in as well. And
you know, it's not as if the WNBA would fail without the NBA, but it certainly just elevates their presence and their legitimacy around the world.
My goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
Hey! Hey! Guess what? It's time for the number of the week. Huddle around the set, kids, because you can play at home, too. And watch our two contestants just have some fun and snarl at each
other. I don't
know
if there's fun in this, because when you get defeated every week, you know.
it's like the Real Housewives of the business of sports, man. This is great.
All right, let's bring it on.
Here we go.
Digging in.
Good news for Las Vegas. They are going to bring a Formula One race back to Sin City, and it's going to take place in November. Good for them. It's going to be a night race. Nevada Governor Steve Sisolak said the city is expecting about 170,000 visitors on race weekend. Now, what I want to know is, what is the estimated economic impact, according to Sisolak, that this race is going to bring?
Is it this year?
This November.
170,000. So how much do we expect each person? I need a calculator here.
Well, there's one on the Bloomberg. We can help you out there.
Oh, my goodness. See, they don't use calculators on the prices, right? When you see the refrigerator up okay. there, you don't see
you're
Drew saying,
really
oh, hey, take
here.
This calculator and take it out of his pocket.
You're asking for big numbers. We're trying to arrive at a number in a logical way.
Who goes first?
Using methodology.
Who would like to go first?
I'm going to just throw a number out there.
Okay, go ahead.
And this has cost me in the past, by the way. This is not a good strategy, but I'm going to say, see, this is why it's not a good strategy. 720
million dollars. $720 million. Minchie?
I'm going to use the B word. 1 billion, as in B, billion.
Yes, you both went over, but I'm going to give it to Scarlett because they're expecting an impact of $500 million.
Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Look at that. Look at that.
Wow. Wow.
Look at that.
And that's when Bob was even saying back in the day, it's like, okay, we need an answer. It's like, you know, the clock.
I mean, I was nowhere close, but, you know, look at that.
Steve Sisolak, the governor, is expecting that weekend, like I said, 170,000 visitors on race weekend to account for 400,000 nights of hotel rooms. So that's, you know, obviously spread out for a long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you go get food, and then you're going to have some gambling, and $500 million for that weekend. Pretty doggone snappy. I like it.
Not bad.
So, Scarlett won.
What do I win? I'm bragging rights, obviously.
Yeah, go ahead. You can brag. Go ahead.
Yay.
Yeah. I think you should go see the boss and you should cover that race that weekend.
Boy, talk about someone sounding snotty, man. That was, I love it. Well, I think you should take your butt there and go cover the daggone thing. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports
Maybe
Show.
I'll just do that.
I am so glad y'all are separated. Each and every week at the same time, plus online, wherever you get your podcast, you can catch those Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports. Fight!
And I'm Scarlett Fu on Twitter at Scarlett Fu, celebrating my victory in this week's Number of the Week.
I don't know if it was Woody Hayes, but someone uttered this line once. Show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. And this is Loser Lynchy here at WCVB.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on stories moving big money in the world of sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.